Welcome to the special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and the Love Is Podcast. I'm excited to welcome the host of the Love Is Podcast, Kim Sorrell. Kim, how are you? I know you're excited about our guest. We're going to have a good time with Joe today.
Yes, we are. Joe, I'm so glad that you're here with us because I can't believe what you've done. And I'm so excited to know more of all of what you've done. And 50 states.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. So you had to visit all 50 states. Did you have to visit them all to do this project?
I have had to visit them over the course of 7 books in this series. It was impossible for me to do 50 states just for the food book and eat 1,000 meals in a year. I had a year to do it. So it was really an accumulation of places I've eaten since 2017, 2018. And also, it's kind of a team effort. You know, family and friends gave me recommendations. The editors at National Geographic gave me places that they ate growing up or in their hometowns or their college towns or in the Washington, D.C. area. So it was really a team effort. And I suppose I had to eat the most meals since it's my book, but I didn't eat all 1,000 of them.
Yeah, 50 states, 1,000 eats. And to get a project like that, it's got to feel good. But Joe, have you worked with National Geographic before this?
Yeah, I've worked with them for about 20 years now. The first book they gave me on my own was around 1999, 2000. And it was driving the Pan American Highway from Texas to Argentina over the course of a year and 5 different trips. And since then, I've worked on somewhere between 45 and 50 books for them, either on my own or as part of a small writing team.
Wow. You've lived your life, Joe. It is amazing that you've had these opportunities. National Geographic, from what I understand, is a hard nut to crack, hard to break into. How did that happen for you?
It took me 16 years to get that first assignment. It was determination. And I talk to writing students now in high schools and universities. And the first thing I tell them is succeeding as a writer is 10% talent and 90% determination. And I met an editor 16 years before my first assignment, and I kept up a correspondence with him for all that time, like once a year. And it was his wife, who was another editor at National Geographic in the book section, that contacted me about that Pan American Highway book. So it was me just being determined and not letting go of that contact and not letting it, you know, it's the fish I wouldn't let get away.
Would you define yourself as a travel writer, Joe?
I would now. I started out as a sports writer and sports editor. I spent a long time as a magazine editor. I was a business writer for 5 years. I actually wrote murder mystery shows in Hollywood for 4 years. As something completely different. One of the shows I worked on was Silk Stockings, which was, I don't know if that night, old yeah. CBS show. I worked
as a
staff writer on the last 2 years of that. Set in Palm Beach, Florida, but filmed here in San Diego where I live. And then I got this book from National Geographic, and that kind of got me out of Hollywood, which wasn't a great place for a writer to be anyways. And into kind of full-time travel, historical, cultural, geographical writing. But I still do a lot of different things. I do celebrity profiles. I do car reviews for Laguna Beach and Newport Beach magazines. And anything that, you know, I often tell people, I'll write anything you pay me for.
Way to handle it. Make sure the checks are a good size too and worth your time. Because writing is a journey, man. Writing takes a long time. Do you have a regular practice when it comes to writing that you get up and do the same thing today?
Yeah, Monday through Friday, roughly 8 to 1 or 2. And then I actually have lunch, take a siesta, get up and do other stuff. Either exercise or I do correspondence or I do my research for what I have to write the following day. But I have a solid block of 5 or 6 hours Monday through Friday that I do writing on, and I've been doing that for decades now. Wow. And it's pretty well ingrained in me. People know not to open my office door during those 5 or 6 hours or they're going to get barked at. And it's kind of like, you know, knife through butter now. It's very easy for me to do just about anything because I've been doing it so many things for so long. So the challenge for me is if something completely different comes up, I like to kind of dive into it. And like last week, I had to write an article on golf carts for Laguna Beach magazine. And I didn't know anything about golf carts, but there's a huge customized golf cart culture in Laguna Beach that I had to get into.
Wow. You know, what was your favorite meal that or restaurant you ate? Yeah, and favorite meal and restaurant you ate in the
There's so many. The favorite breakfast, the most memorable breakfast was in West Texas in a town called Marfa. It's an artsy little town in West Texas. And I had just done a canoe camping trip with one of my kids on the Rio Grande and Big Bend National Park. And we've been eating campfire meals for days. And so we were on our way back to California, drove through West Texas and went through this town called Marfa. And we realized that the next breakfast place was like 2 hours down the road and we had to stop. And we found this little place called the Watering Hole that was a little hole in the wall, really. And they had Tex-Mex scrambled eggs and biscuits and gravy. And the sun came up over the desert. And I was with my youngest daughter who had just graduated from college at that point. And it was just a really nice, memorable breakfast. So I would say that. Steak-wise, and my wife will back this up because I mention it all the time, the 1888 Chop House at the Banff Springs Hotel in the Canadian Rockies is the best steak I've ever had. A filet mignon, Alberta beef filet mignon that just melted in your mouth. And I could go back and eat that every night.
You're making my mouth water. I think I could go back and eat that. So I'm curious, how different is the taste of food when the atmosphere is better? How much does the atmosphere influence the taste, do you think?
Well, you know, the book covers kind of the high-end Michelin star places, and I'm always looking for kind of mom-and-pop restaurants and roadside diners and little hole-in-the-wall places like that one in Marfa, which made the book. You know, you can get bad food in a Michelin star restaurant, at least things that don't agree with you, and you can get amazing meals in a little hole-in-the-wall mom-and-pop diner place. And that's what I found. One of my big discoveries doing this book, which I kind of knew from the other books, was that regional food is alive and well in the United States and Canada. It's not fading away. Not everything is a chain restaurant. There are new regional places open. I wish there were more. Utah has great regional food that's hard to find outside of anyone's home or going to a funeral wake or going to a wedding or anything like that. They have some amazing food in Utah that is almost impossible to find in a restaurant. The Upper Peninsula of Michigan, the UP, and they call themselves Upers. Uper cuisine is really amazing. I knew nothing about it before this book. And, you know, the area was populated by Italians, Finns from Scandinavia, and Cornish miners, and they all brought their food with them. And they each have a very iconic food that's still part of Upper cuisine in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So, yeah, German food at some of the diners in North Dakota. Barbecue in North Carolina. I mean, I only really knew about Kansas City, Memphis, and Texas before, but North Carolina has amazing barbecue culture.
All right. So tell me, I'm going to be going to North Dakota in August. Where in North Dakota did you eat?
Well, there's a small chain called Kroll's, Kroll's. And they were founded by German immigrants decades ago, like a century ago. And there's one in Fargo. There's another in across the river from Bismarck. And they have German specialties. You know, if you like your sauerkraut and bratwurst, that's where you can get it in a American diner setting out on the Great Plains of North Dakota.
Okay, I'm so glad to hear that regional food is alive and well. I live in the Lower Peninsula of Michigan, so I grew up with pasties and some of the great food that you get in the UP. And I love it that there is still such an influence, a European influence, wherever people are from, that influences the area's food. I think that's really fantastic. And is there a certain cuisine that you find better, well, or even that differs like the fins over here are different than the fins over there or anything?
Well, that's
like
a good question. The fins in the Upper Peninsula, they have amazing pancakes with berry sauce. And the Italians have the spicy sausage sandwich. And of course, the Cornish, they have their Cornish pasties, which are beef-filled kind of turnovers, beef and veggie-filled turnovers. They're all savory. They're all good. To be honest with you, I don't think I've had Finnish food anywhere else. There's a town up in Northern California that had also had Cornish miners that came out to mine gold in underground mines. And they're famous for their Cornish pasties up there. I had them far enough apart that I couldn't judge which makes better pasties, but those are the two places in the U.S. that I know have them. So,
well, Joe, one question that Kim always asks on her podcast, Love is a love question. Go ahead, Kim, with your question.
Yeah. So as you're traveling the world, Joe, I went to one place, Haiti, and I was going to figure out the true meaning of love. And what I figured out just blew my mind. It just rocked my world. And, you know, love is a part of everything. And so I'm guessing that you love travel. You love food. Where does love play a role in all that you do and in your writing?
Well, when I was younger, before I met my wife, there was literal love of just meeting people on your travel that you had an immediate spark with and that you ended up traveling with for months and in some case, a couple of cases, years. I met someone in Turkey who I ended up traveling in Europe and Africa and California with over the course of the next 3 years. And you have those travel romances. They don't really work in real life, you know, when you get back to work or school or whatever. But that love is part of, you know, travel for me, especially when you're young and a backpacker or. And, but yeah, I mean, I love travel. That's been my thing for as long as I can remember. I'm one of those weird kids that always had National Geographic magazine at home and the maps and had them on the living room floor. And I was kind of addicted to it. And in university and college, I did a geography degree, but I also worked in the college paper. And then I decided, am I going to become a geographer? Or am I going to become a traveler? Or I'm sorry, a journalist. And it was the travel part of it. It seemed like I had more chances as a journalist than I did as a geographer to travel, funny enough. And that's what I started doing. So yeah, it's a lifelong love affair. I love food, but I love to travel more. And I'm willing to put up with bad food to go very interesting places, which I have done a couple times.
All right, Joe, we appreciate it. Best place we can find information on your book. You purchase that anywhere, Amazon, all of them.
Amazon Books, Barnes & Noble Books, or I always like to plug your local independent bookstore.
All right.
Wherever you are.
Thanks again, Joe.
Sure. Thanks, guys.
That was the special simulcast, The Neil Haley Show and The Love Is Podcast, guys.